Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here until 5 a.m. And we've got a full show for you this morning. It's Monday morning, which means later on my dad will call in and tell a joke, because it's Monday, and it's a jokey time. And we will have a full Emmys wrap-up, going through some of the best moments of the show and talking about the winners and the losers and the surprises, and we'll talk more about the Emmys coming up a little bit later on. Colin Suter is ill this week. He was sick most of the week, so he didn't get a chance to go and see anything. So Jim Leskowski is going to fill in as we do the Monday morning movie reviews. It's Eric Childress and Jim Leskowski filling in. And then we'll talk box office, and we'll get our final wrap-up, an exclusive report about the Toronto Film Festival, all the movies that Eric Childress saw while he was in Toronto, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we'll get a preview of some of the stuff that we're going to be seeing in the coming weeks and months that premiered at the Toronto Film Festival. So, movie reviews, Toronto Film Festival, box office, Emmys, all crammed into this show until 5 a.m. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And you can send your text there, too. And check us out on Facebook.com/NickDShow. Okay, let's begin by reviewing the latest movies. Not a ton to talk about in terms of new movies this week. So we'll get everybody on here now. Here's Eric Childress. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
Hello, and Jim Leskowski. Hey, Jim.
Hey, man. How's it going?
All right. Thanks again for sitting in for us. Eric, Colin's a little bit under the weather, so he's taking this this Monday morning off. Jim, tell everybody, once again, remind everybody about the Play Now Now Playing Network.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. I just want people to go out and get some more podcasts after they, of course, check out the many wonderful podcasts on WGN, including yours, of course.
Yeah.
The Now Playing Network hosts a wide variety of pop culture-focused entertainment hosted by a lot of talented people, including Jim Hankey, who continues to do fantastic work with Vinyl Emergency and getting incredible interviews. And, of course, there's a large variety of shows, including supporting characters hosted by Bill Ackerman, Patrick Rappold's Tracks of the Damned, which has a lot of great audio commentaries for various horror films, and Rebecca and Jeff co-host a biweekly movie-themed show called Fresh Perspective. Eric Childress, of course, Movie Madness will be returning momentarily, and I host Directors Club as well as Pop Culture Club, and I think people should tune in to some future interviews with Pop Culture Club, because I have just landed an interview with the director of Pump Up the Volume, which is the film that changed my life.
Yeah. That's
so
great.
I'm very excited for that, and people can go check that out at nowplayingnetwork.net.
All right, very cool. Nowplayingnetwork.net. Check all that out. Okay, before we get to the movies that we have seen and that we are going to talk about, none of us went to see Bridget Jones' Baby.
No.
And I mean, seriously, I was not motivated enough to go and see that movie, considering that every time I see a commercial for it or a trailer for it, I want to vomit. I can't even imagine a worse fate than this. And it's 2 hours and 3 minutes long.
I've still never seen The Edge of Reason.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything.
Right.
No. So,
and then the other one that I wanted to see this weekend, I just couldn't make it out to Highland Park, was Max Rose, which is the movie starring Jerry Lewis. And it's been sitting on the shelf for a few years, and it's not got a lot of huge buzz or anything, and I hear it's not that great. But, you know, any chance to see Jerry Lewis at 90 do his thing, I was upset that I couldn't make it out. I didn't have time to see that one. But I will as soon as it comes on, you know, on video on demand or on DVD or whatever. But that's Max Rose. Those were the two that we two big ones that we missed. Yeah. All right, so let's – okay. Jim? Why don't you start out with 31? Tell us about 31.
Speaking of vomit, so Rob Zombie is back and somehow keeps making movies due to an unexplained but rabid fan base that contributed to his Kickstarter for yet another sort of, I guess, hillbilly horror excursion. The film opens with a band of misfit carnies on the day before Halloween making their way to Las Vegas to set up shop for a new show. And while traveling down an open road, they are stopped in their tracks by what looks like Halloween directions sort of littered all across the roadway. And rather than try to drive through them, they stop to move the decorations. And as they are doing so, they are ambushed and the group is attacked. Five of them are taken prisoner while the rest are killed. And the prisoners become subjected to some sort of sick, twisted survival game that's a bit like The Running Man on crack. The five survivors do their best to stay alive inside of this, I guess, like an abandoned factory of some kind, often looking like the set of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. So the survivors consist of Sherry Moon Zombie, Meg Foster, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, Kevin Jackson, and Jeff Daniel Phillips. The person responsible for this murder game is none other than Malcolm McDowell, dressed as like an aristocrat that introduces each physical challenge like a sick, twisted Mark Summers, combined with maybe the man who makes Tom Cruise undressed in Eyes Wide Shut. So
it reminded me of the characters that kind of preside over this murder thing. This the game of 31 thing. They reminded me of the two characters that Mark McKinney and David Koechner used to play on SNL. The guys with the those guys. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. So these challenges are basically just nothing but a series of various murderers doused in makeup, looking like demented WWF clowns, and eventually we're treated, I guess, to the truly despicable force of evil that we meet during the rather tasteless prologue, which kind of just sets the tone for the proceedings. That prologue really, that'll let you know if you're on board. And it's all up to the survivors to really overcome this crazy obstacle course slash game called 31. Who will survive? Who cares? Normally this kind of setup kind of appeals to me because I like movies where random people are forced to fight for their lives in a contained space and have to band together to defeat the bad guys. You know, like films like Trespass or Judgment Night are kind of like fun examples of this scenario. But this is a Rob Zombie film through and through. And as far as I'm concerned, he is creatively bankrupt and always has been. Every other word begins with the F word. Every woman is constantly referred to as the B word. And there's just nothing but nihilistic glee throughout. And somehow, I don't know, Rob Zombie just thinks it's supposed to be fun. I mean, yeah, heads are lopped off, bodies are impaled, and we even get a chainsaw battle. But, you know, his screenplays are just so lazy, and the dialogue is so hateful, and the pace is just monotonous and repetitive that I just cannot begin to find entertainment in something like this. I actually grow quite stultified by the time we get to a dream sequence where there's actually jokes aimed at women that are beyond misogynistic. So, I mean, I'm not a prude. I obviously love horror, and I even love a good, fun splatterfest, but everything about Rob Zombie's films are derivative, childish, and vulgar for the sake of vulgarity. I mean, the best thing I can say is that Sherry Moon Zombie, not quite as obnoxious as she usually is, I think. But I'm reaching here for something good to say about this. But really, Rob Zombie is incapable of making anything good. This is probably the worst film of the year, and Rob Zombie should be banned from stepping behind the camera.
I made it 38 minutes in. I turned it off after 38 minutes. He just sucks. He's one of the worst filmmakers on the planet. His movies are terrible. He's not made, and I know that he's got a lot of staunch defenders. I don't understand that. It's it's mind-boggling to me that anyone would like any of this guy's movies. I thought, okay, well, I'll give it a chance. It's on VOD. I'll watch it, and I made it 38 minutes in. As you say, it's really horribly shot. It's just the most unlikable. I mean, the characters, we're supposed to care about these characters who are incredibly obnoxious and unlikable and like, okay, if you guys are going to get killed, good. I don't care. And what passes for style in Rob Zombie's world is just like really ham-fisted, over-the-top violence, nothing that exists without just the attempt of just simply shocking you without any kind of substance whatsoever. He's a terrible filmmaker, and I don't know, you know, the one sort of weird interest that people might have in these movies that Rob Zombie makes are some of the interesting people that he casts in the movies, because he gets people that you would know from your, like E.G. Daly shows up in this movie. I don't know if she shows up. I mean, I only saw her in one scene, because I only made it 30 minutes into the movie. But she just...
No, she does show up later. Okay. You didn't miss anything.
Okay. I saw her, you know, and you can see some of the cast members, like Meg Foster is in these movies. For some reason, Malcolm McDowell, Judy Greer. He gets these people that have, you know, a status in that genre and in the pop culture world. It's kind of interesting to see them now or where they're working, but he gives them nothing to do. I don't know if Rob Zombie has pictures of Malcolm McDowell with goats or something. I have no idea why he's in these movies. It is absolute trash. It's garbage. Rob Zombie is just beyond one of the worst filmmakers ever. And I still, as a horror fan my entire life, and again, you guys know I'm not a prude. As a horror fan my entire life, I am baffled by the fact that this guy has fans. Baffled. I don't understand it. It's a piece of crap. So, all right, that's called 31, and it's awful. Really, really awful. Eric, you it played a couple of film festivals, right? Did you just choose not to see it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
it played Sundance this year as part of their midnight package. And I just, I mean, there are a few filmmakers that I completely give up with on film festivals.
Yeah.
But he's absolutely one of them.
Oh, yeah. And I really seriously, the word filmmaker, I would be seriously be hesitant to use that word.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. Okay. Guys, hang on, all right? We've got to take a break here. Eric and Jim Liskowski, Colin's out this week feeling a little under the weather, but he'll be back next week. We got a couple more movies to review, and then Eric will wrap up everything at the Toronto Film Festival. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. It's Monday morning. It means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And it's also Monday morning movie reviews are happening right now. Colin is out sick. Jim Liskowski is filling in for him, and we thank Jim for that. And Eric Childress is here, and Eric and I will talk about Box Office Plus. Eric will give us a full wrap-up of the Toronto Film Festival, which he just got back from, and we're going to talk about all the movies that he saw, the good and the bad. And then after that, we're going to talk about the Emmys. The Emmys were announced last night. They were awarded last night, and I thought the show was actually surprisingly great. Especially in terms of who they gave the awards to. There were some genuine surprises and some awards that went to the correct people. And I also thought Jimmy Kimmel did a really good job, and there were some great bits. Some bits fell flat, and we'll get into that. But anyway, we'll talk more about the Emmys. And if you have comments about the Emmys, we'll talk about that later on as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Nick D Show. All right, let's get back to the movies. And here is Eric. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
And Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hello again.
All right, we're getting ready to get back into it. Hey, Eric, I'm assuming, did you catch up with South Park?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Nick, remember Stormtroopers?
did you not think that the member berries sounded a lot like Cartman?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They made me Stormtroopers. Yeah, no, absolutely.
God, that show is so good. It's ridiculous.
The turn of the member berries.
Yeah,
the turn that they take.
Yeah, I agree.
Destroyed me.
It was so good. By the way, the 20th anniversary. By the way, 20th season of South Park, and it's as funny, if not funnier, than it's ever been. It's so good, and it's so timely. I mean, my God, I know that their turnaround rate is quick.
Yeah,
but man, I mean, there's I don't know if there's funnier or more timely satire on TV than that show. All right, okay, so Eric,
yeah.
Why don't you just tell us about Blair Witch?
Yeah,
and the little story behind
Toronto earlier this week. I had just gotten out of a screening of Blair Witch at the Toronto Film Festival, which opened this weekend in theaters. And for months and months, we were believed that this was a movie called The Woods, a new film directed by Adam Weingart and written by Simon Barrett, who gave us a terrific horror movie called You're Next. And another pretty solid one called The Guest. They've also done segments like the VHS series and ABCs of Death and things like that. But so for months now, we've been told this movie was going to be called The Woods. And it was being touted as sort of a new, just a new entry, you know, one of the great new entries in horror. And then, in a sort of a complete surprise, at Comic-Con, they held a screening of this film, and all of a sudden it was announced that it was actually a brand new Blair Witch film. And it wasn't just some stupid marketing ploy by Lionsgate. This film is actually rooted in the history of the Blair Witch. In fact, it's pretty much a sequel way down the road, where the brother of Heather Donahue's character has come upon some new a brand new videotape that suggests that she may still be alive somewhere out there in the woods if they could possibly find her. So him and his girlfriend, who is making a documentary about his documentary or something like that, and a couple other friends go off into the woods and decide that they're going to do their best to find his sister and camp out overnight despite hearing warnings about what might happen to them in the woods. And having what they know about the Blair Witch, seems like they might be a little less lackadaisical in their behavior. But needless to say,
and of course, Eric, they are teamed up with a couple of local weirdos.
Yes,
which is another red flag. Let's bring these two weirdos along with us.
Yeah, so. when the two weirdos, the only two weirdos that they interview, really decide they're like, hey, we want to come with you guys, and they just kind of go, okay, you know, it's not a particularly solid setup for a film, but you hoping that once you get out into the woods, that these directors, amongst all others, you know, might, you know, be able to sort of generate some sort of new kind of suspense. This is just some sort of new variation on what we had seen in The Blair Witch, maybe a little more flash, maybe just, you know, a few more interesting ideas for set pieces and suspense sequences and new ways to do with the found footage format. And so you just kind of sit there and wait, and then the movie's over, and you've basically just seen another found footage movie. There is just nothing about this movie that screams out why it should exist and why these directors felt the need to not bring their A-game to this. You know, if it was one thing, if there was just another Blair Witch film and it was just some anonymous director that we had never heard of, then it would probably be par for the course. This is the kind of movie we would expect. But you've seen the pedigree that these guys have delivered in the past. It's kind of shocking that, with the exception of a very late sequence where one of the characters is burrowing around in a giant dirt hole, there's really nothing in this movie to recommend to anyone, particularly fans of horror movies, who have seen countless found footage movies time and time again in the 17 years since the original Blair Witch Project came out in 1999. There have been a couple handfuls, maybe, of really good, solid found footage movies that have some new ideas to them, including the recent found footage 3D, which is still waiting distribution. But this film has none of it. And I sat there really kind of in shock in the Toronto with the crowd that was geared up for this type of movie. And even despite the applause they gave at the end, because that's what you do at film festivals, there's just nothing. I think most of us kind of sat there in kind of stunned silence. There aren't any really good, solid scares. All the characters are just running into each other from behind, with a camera in their hands, and that's basically the extent of the shocks. Ooh, a tent flies up in the air. Look at that. And then they're running around, searching for people, and there's no buildup of suspense. It's just a lot of noise and screaming and more loud noises, and then the movie's over, and you go, why the hell did I just submit myself to that? It's 80 minutes of just complete waste of time.
All right. And Jim?
Yeah, I'm with Eric. It brings nothing new to the table. It's like a cut and paste of the original, but just, again, like with the volume turned up. I mean, to this day, I still talk to people who think the original Blair Witch was kind of dull and uninteresting. But for me, man, I will take a slow burn, tension-inducing experience over jump scares and loud chaos for its climax. I mean, the original consistently subverted your expectations in ways that really get under your skin. I mean, but it's too bad because, well, yeah, I'm a fan of Your Next and The Guest, and I thought maybe they would offer, like, another subversion or a clever ode to the original without essentially just taking the blueprints for it and, you know, amping it up and adding more noise and adding more characters and more jump scares. And it's really kind of just flat overall. I do like like Eric mentioned, the sequence towards the end that did get to me a little bit, but it's a completely unnecessary by the numbers version of the Blair Witch Project. So I say skip it entirely.
Yeah. All right, before I actually get into my actual review, this, I think, pretty much sums up the movie.
I don't know what we're yelling about! Loud noises!
That's it.
There it is.
That's the movie. That's the whole movie. So I was massively disappointed with this movie. You know, I was really, when I heard about it in July, I was so excited about it, and the buzz was all huge. And by the way, the buzz on this thing is just was through the roof. Eric, how do you explain that? Are there people out there that actually really like this movie?
Well, I don't know where, like, when this movie was screened for certain people. I mean, the early trailers had, like, critic quotes on them.
Yeah.
You know, in
yeah.
the theaters, and at least you know there, you know, at least one of the critic quotes is from like a pretty respected, you know, writer, someone who used to be here in Chicago, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
and the others were horror sites and whatnot. And horror fan sites can, you know, they're a little too kind sometimes to horror movies, and clearly they've worked with this guy before too, so that I can guarantee you that's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
But, I other than that, I can't explain it.
Well, I love The Blair Witch Project. That movie really, I think, was brilliantly made. And obviously, we can all talk about how incredibly well marketed it was,
mm-hmm.
Especially, at the beginnings of what would become the internet and using the internet to advertise and to market a movie. Just brilliantly marketed. But I think the movie itself is great. I think it's a really, really brilliant movie, and it's scary. It's a scary movie. The other thing about this, and you're absolutely right, it's just people screaming for it's like 89 minutes of just people running around screaming. Nothing particularly scary happens in the entire movie. If there's any thing that could be creepy, it was done 17 years ago and better. I also was a little bit... I don't like the fact that there's more supernatural stuff in this movie. The fact that in the first movie it was all like, what's going on? You never really knew. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, in the original Blair Witch Project, the supernatural stuff, you can still, when you're watching it, you can still go, okay, what's going on? Nothing is happening here that's supernatural. That everything that's happening in this movie can be explained in some way or form. There's stuff that happens in this Blair Witch that's completely supernatural. Where you
right.
just go, oh, okay. Well, we're in a world now where creatures come out of the woods and make things move. And you know what I mean? Like that
yeah.
completely took away for any kind of like any feeling that I would have that I was like being terrified, because it's like, okay, well, you know, they also. And I will say this: the scene that you guys both mentioned is the strongest scene in the movie. Unfortunately, by that point, I was so completely bored. It's the woman is caught in the tunnel trying to get through, and it was a clever use of two separate cameras that she had with her.
Yes,
that was the one. Yeah. That was the one thing, and they tried to amp up that stuff too, bringing in drones with cameras, bringing in the, you know, like the Bluetooth camera on the
mm-hmm.
ear and all that stuff to justify the editing back and forth. But none of it works. They add all these new gadgets, but they don't bring anything original to it. It's just like, okay, we got this now. We can have a different angle of someone screaming and running around in the woods. I don't know how many times flashlights go out in this movie and get smacked back. You know, how often can you smack a flashlight and it comes back on?
Well, three times, like a Tootsie Pop.
Yeah, I guess. In this movie, you can slap them 7,000 times and they come back on. And then the other thing that I want to mention, besides, I mean, you know, it's just not scary. It's loud does not mean scary. You know what I mean? It's not. Yeah. It's not. Just people screaming and going, and loud crunching noises and wood breaking and stuff like that's not scary. You got to, and it was, it's a massively disappointing movie considering, you know, what these guys have made in the horror genre, you know, recently and a few years ago. Great stuff. Like Your Next is a terrific movie. The other thing is, you know, the whole reason why you turn around. You know, like that final shot of the original movie, The Blair Witch Project, one of the reasons why that shot is so terrifying, one, it's subtle, you know, just a dude standing in the corner with his back to you. And that is that. And every time I see the movie, that final image to me is just it's terrifying and it's awesome and it's great. They changed the whole meaning of it. The mythology that's set up in the original film is just crapped on in this movie. They change it. That's not why he turned around and he's standing in the corner like that. They changed the whole thing. So I was mad about that. I'm like, wait a minute, don't take the mythology of this movie and screw it up in addition to just like blindly copying what made the original movie good except making it louder and dumber. So, right. Yeah, it's a bad movie, really, really bad. And I was it's one of the biggest disappointments of the year for me considering how much I love the original movie and how much I like these guys who made it. So a terrible movie, really, really bad. And man, did my parents hate it. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I thought my dad was going to punch me in the mouth when it was over. So, and, you know, so he was like, when it ended, he just put his hands up. He's like, what the hell? What is that? So
he wasn't alone in that.
No, I mean, but there was, like, nobody in the theater. We'll get to that later, Eric.
Wait, you brought your mom to see this movie?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, she saw the original and liked it.
Okay.
Yeah, she liked it. She liked Blair Witch Project. She did.
Okay.
So, and she hated this one, though. All right, hang on, guys. We got a break here, and we'll come back. We got one more movie to review, and then Eric will give us a summation of the Toronto Film Festival. So, yeah, Blair Witch, one of the biggest disappointments of the year, a terrible movie. All right, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN. Good morning. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are doing the movie reviews. As you can tell, it's Monday morning, so it's time for the movie reviews. All right, Jim, tell us about Snowden.
All right, well, I think most people know by now the story of Edward Snowden, a man that some call a hero while others call a traitor. So we start out with his humble beginnings in the military and follow him throughout his career as a cybersecurity savant, so to speak, and gets turned into an NSA contractor, who then, of course, as we all know, became a whistleblower and fugitive by leaking documents that revealed this kind of vast paradigm-shifting scope of the new American surveillance state, in which the government kind of takes on the form, literally, of Big Brother with the ability to tap into any facet of our online presence or take a peek into our cell phones, thus making our private lives pretty much non-existent. Snowden is portrayed admirably by Joseph Gordon-Levitt here. As long as you can get past the interesting choice to lower his vocal register, I would say he did an okay job with the role.
Jim, I got to tell you, Jim, it drove me nuts.
I can see
his voice drove me nuts. And I know that he's trying to do Snowden because that's how Snowden talks.
Sure.
But, man, did I find it distracting. It just really distracting. Much more than people complained about his French accent in The Walk.
I was fine.
No, his French accent in The Walk was fine. This is, oof. Okay, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's interesting enough that you bring up The Walk because that was also, it also had a very interesting documentary that came before it. And here, Melissa Leo plays the documentary filmmaker Laura Poitras, who filmed this fantastic documentary called Citizen Four, all about Snowden, that would later win an Academy Award. Zachary Quinto plays Glenn Greenwald, the reporter for The Guardian, who, along with, I think it was Ewan McAskill, authored basically the series of articles that elaborated on Snowden's leaked information. And there's also a little bit of surprise casting with a CIA supervisor who recognizes his young self in Snowden and gives him pointers from time to time. And last but not least, Snowden's girlfriend, Lindsay Mills, is played by Shailene Woodley, who basically just serves as this kind of the motivating factor for him, you know, as kind of a belief in the government that should – serve the people for the better. And later he starts to see his idealism and conservative beliefs transform over time. And eventually we get to, you know, a rather breathtaking sequence where Snowden decides to copy all the information onto an SD card and then meets those journalists and filmmaker in the hotel room for the exchange of information, captured so beautifully in Citizen 4. So behind the helm of this story is, of course, Oliver Stone, who lately seems to dial back his sort of furious anger towards the system with films like W and World Trade Center, both surprisingly conventional and not what you come to expect from the guy that brought you something like Salvador or even Nixon. For the most part, I thought this movie was just fine. It was kind of what I expected, nothing more, nothing less. I think Snowden's accomplishments and his audacity should be, you know, seen by a general audience. So I don't mind that this film was made, but I would point them in the direction of the documentary Citizen 4 for a much more sort of immediate and nail-biting, caught-in-the-moment of, you know, kind of experience. You know, a director like Oliver Stone, despite playing it safe, I think did okay with the material overall.
Okay, I'll give you my review of Snowden after the break. News is next. All right. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you, everybody? I'm your overnight dude. Weekday mornings, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. At 5 o'clock, it's Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And at 6 o'clock, it is Steve Cochran with your morning drive on this Monday morning. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. And we will wrap up the Emmys. The Emmy Awards were handed out last night in what I thought was a pretty decent ceremony. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was pretty funny, and there were a lot of pleasant surprises and awards that went to the people that I thought should have won the awards, which is kind of shocking. I thought overall a very impressive Emmys, and we'll talk about that coming up here. But right now, we're getting back to the movie stuff here. Eric Childress joins us each week, and he talks about the box office, so we're going to talk about that. And then Eric just got back from Toronto and the Toronto International Film Festival, and we'll get more reviews from those movies that he saw there. Before the break, we were talking about Snowden. It was okay is the best way to put it. As maddening as Oliver Stone is as a filmmaker to me, there are movies that he's made that make me crazy. I kind of prefer, at least that Oliver Stone to the sort of toothless Oliver Stone that's making movies now. You know what I mean? Yeah. At least, if I hate a movie that Oliver Stone makes, at least it's provocative enough for me to be pissed off about it. But that's all kind of gone now. You know what I mean? Like, with W and, like, World Trade Center, you would think, okay, this guy's going to go nuts here. And he doesn't. He doesn't here either. I mean, it's clear on what side he stands. You know, with Edward Snowden, that's very clear, and he's obviously made that very clear with the press, and so is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. There are some nice sequences in this movie. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's performance is fine, but the voice drove me absolutely nuts. And again, this movie, it's fine, it's okay, but since Citizen 4 is a thing that people can see, that's what you see. Whereas, in my opinion, Zemeckis improved his subject matter over the documentary that was made, you know, last year, over the subject, you know, that Joseph Gordon-Levitt played. It's not terrible. It's not very good. It's not as sort of shocking and propulsive as you would think an Oliver Stone movie would be. It just kind of sits there, and when it's over, you go, okay, there's some good performances, there are some nice sequences, but no. So I would rent Citizen 4 anyway.
Yeah. That's probably how I feel about it, too.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, what do we got? What do we got next week? We got The Magnificent Seven. We got Storks, right?
Yeah. Those are the two big ones,
right?
I think, next week. Yeah.
Okay. Magnificent Seven and Storks are the big ones. And I think Colin will be back for that. So, Jim, thank you for filling in. I appreciate it, sir.
Oh, happy to. Anytime, man. Take care.
All right. See you later. There's Jim Laskowski. All right. Let's do the box office. All right. So the box office this week, number one for the second week in a row, $22 million is Sully, with $70 million total, and I guess that's pretty solid, is it not?
Oh yeah, no, this is really a big hit for Warner Brothers and Clint Eastwood, and it's headed to become his fifth $100 million film that he's directed ever.
Wow.
Yeah, it's probably going to end up probably third behind, obviously, American Sniper and Gran Torino.
Wow. Okay. Now, you weren't here last week.
Right, yeah, not for the regular reviews.
What did you think of it?
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Colin and I kind of have the same reaction to it. I think the movie's fine. I think Hanks is great in the movie.
Yeah.
I think the structure of the movie didn't quite work for me, especially when there seemed to be so little to the actual revelation. I actually kind of called it the Project X ending, if you will, and the sort of the solution that he comes to that sort of, you know, gets everyone off, basically. But I thought it was fine. You know, it was, you know, I think it's a good length, like 190 minutes.
Yeah.
Basically. Well, I think, you know, that helps.
Yeah. Well, I actually liked it a lot more than you guys did. I thought it was pretty great. And and again, Hanks is great. So is Aaron Eckhart. Aaron Eckhart's great in it too.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it in IMAX, and it's one of those, it's one of the few times when I am absolutely recommending that people see it in IMAX.
Okay.
Because I think it makes a big difference, because the entire film was shot in IMAX. And my theory here, and I talked about this last week, my theory, Eric, as to why, you know, when I heard, you know, it's a movie, it's Sully, it's about the plane that landed in the Hudson, It's Clint Eastwood, it's Tom Hanks, I thought at least 2.5 hours.
Right.
You know what I mean? Okay, that's a given, it's going to be 2.5 hours. This is like a little over 90 minutes. And here's my reasoning behind this. See if you agree with me on this, Eric.
Okay.
Now, you know that that Clint Eastwood is a very conservative film. Well, I don't mean that in that regard. I just mean it's a very,
right,
in terms of his filmmaking style. He likes to work cheap. He's always under budget. He gets his stuff done quick because he wants to golf and go to sleep.
Right.
All right. So my thought is, in using IMAX, in the IMAX format, and shooting the entire film in IMAX, it's a much more expensive process. So I think he went, we're going to cut this down to 90 minutes. Because he didn't want to go over budget. That's the reason why I think it's 90 minutes long.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's as good a theory as any.
Yeah.
I just, you know, because, you know, Colin, you know, I probably said this on a show last week, where when we both sort of went to the movie, and the way the movie's advertised is the whole idea is like, well, what's the story you haven't seen?
Yeah.
And it's like, and then you see it, and it's like, no, that's kind of the story I knew already.
Yeah.
And now, there are disputes that even, like, some of the stuff that, you know, we think we didn't know never actually happened that way. But,
yeah,
you know, whatever. The movie's fine.
Okay.
And I think what you're kind of seeing now with having that won the box office a second week in a row is that it seems like after the sort of the dreary summer that we had for a lot of quality and what movies were sort of geared at, adults are starting to take over the box office.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. No, I'm a really big fan of the film. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommend people see it in IMAX for the full experience. It's really good. Okay, number two, Blair Witch, terrible movie, $9.6 million. Now, this was expected to take Sully down?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes, it was, and I fully expected it to take Sully down, just because the major fact that horror has been doing very well.
Yeah,
I mean, Don't Breathe has been out there for a few weeks, and obviously has done tremendous. We're going to get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But you know, it just seems like, you know, horror is having that year where you can just put a thing out and it's going to, you know, might pull in an $18-20 million weekend. But here's where I think Lionsgate screwed up, changing the name. I think if they would have released this film as The Woods and let people discover on their own that this was actually a Blair Witch thing, they might have hated the movie still, maybe even resented it a little bit more, but they would have gotten the money opening weekend.
Yeah, well,
because the thing is, I mean, you know, the two words you're not hearing the member Barry say is Blair Witch.
No, that's true.
When people, like, I mean, we talked about it during the review, is that, you know, while the three of us really like the Blair Witch Project, there are a lot of people that hate that.
Oh,
movie.
I know. Yeah.
So when people, you know, you say, hey, let's go see The Woods, like, oh, well, it's a horror movie. Say, hey, you want to go see Blair Witch? And I'm like, no, screw that.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Think that's exactly what happened to it.
I totally agree with you, because it is such a divisive film, the first one. I mean, it's split right down the middle. I don't know anyone who is like, it was all right. You know,
right.
Either you love it or you absolutely hate it. There's nothing
in
between.
You're scared by it or you're bored by it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. All right, number three, Bridget Jones' Baby, $8.2 million. That's not good.
Not good in the U.S., but this series, you know, makes its money overseas.
Yeah.
This series they don't cost a lot of money and pull in like $200 million overseas.
God. I don't understand.
So, I mean, even Edge of Reason made almost as much as the original movie.
Jeez.
In fact, it actually, in worldwide, it actually outgrossed.
Did it really?
The first film, yeah.
Wow. All right. Number four, Snowden, $8 million. Was that expected? I didn't think this thing, I mean, you know.
Yeah,
it was pushed back like three times, right?
Yeah, it was supposed to open last December, right in the middle of award season. Then it was pushed back to May. And then they realized, like, well, maybe early summer is not a good time for this movie. So they're like, well, let's put it in the Toronto, a post-Toronto slot. So that's what they did. And you talk about people didn't want to see Blair Witch. There are a lot of people that don't want to hear the story of Edward Snowden.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected it to do under $10 million, and that's what it did.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't want to hear, really see the story of Edward Snowden. Snowden, and I think a lot of people don't want to hear Oliver Stone tell it.
Right.
I think that's another thing too. And then we'll just do the top five. Number five, Don't Breathe, man. $5.6 million, $75 million total.
Amazing.
Unbelievable.
Truly
hit.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, you know why? Because it's good.
Well, that helps.
Yeah,
people want to say, you know, critics don't help the box office first weekend. That's, you know, kind of true. But if there were a lot more, if you know, Blair Witch was pulling the kind of, you know, Rotten Tomatoes score that Don't Breathe had,
yeah,
it might have pulled in a few couple extra million.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. All right. Well, that's the top five right there. Sully, again, the big hit. And next week, what are we going to, Storks number one, maybe, or Magnificent Seven?
Oh, it's a good question. It's a really good question. I think Storks is going to do very well. I mean, Storks could pull in number one slot. We're a few weeks away. Wildlife obviously didn't make any money.
No.
And Kubo and Pete's Dragon are just about to fall off the top ten. So, yeah, Storks could... Yeah, Storks are magnificent. It's going to be one. They're going to be 1-2.
1-2. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Eric, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break here. Eric Childress just got back from Toronto, and when we come back, he's going to tell us all about some of the movies that he saw while he was at the Toronto International Film Festival. All right, here exclusively on the show here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. And Eric Childress has returned from the Toronto International Film Festival. So you saw 38 movies total.
Yes.
And since the last visit that we had from you, you saw 25 films.
Give or take, yeah. I think that's right. I think Dan had that tagged.
All right. let's talk about the movies again. You know, these are movies that a lot of us are going to see in the coming weeks and the coming months.
Yeah.
And so these are all exclusive stuff. So overall, a good, decent fest or what?
Well, I mean, I think numbers-wise, I think it comes in sort of what I've had in years past with Toronto is that, you see a handful of good, really, really good movies. And then, you're looking for hidden gems along the way, and you either choose right or you choose wrong. I tend to choose wrong. Or maybe the festival chooses wrong. I don't know, however you want to frame it. But the thing about this year's festival is that it seemed like the movies that everyone had expectations for, like really strong expectations, all landed. They didn't really disappoint. There weren't a lot of like big disappointments at the festival.
Okay.
Everything, with the exception of maybe like one movie that sort of came out of nowhere. Most of the movies that had either come in with sort of preordained buzz or just hopeful expectations, movies like Monster Calls and Loving and Moonlight and things like that, they were all as advertised.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into it. Anywhere you want to go, just give me a title and tell us about it.
Well, we shouldn't waste any more time in telling people about Damien Chazelle's La La Land.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, Damien Chazelle, who we last saw on the scene with the film Whiplash, which is a huge hit at Sundance, has now, for his follow-up to his multiple Oscar-winning film, has made a Hollywood musical, an old-fashioned Hollywood musical that with all original songs. It's not based on a Broadway play or some previous source material and whatnot. It is a completely original film with obviously many influences from the golden age of musicals past. And this is, it stars Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone in their third movie together.
Yeah.
It takes place at a time when Emma Stone, it's set in modern Hollywood, Emma Stone is a wannabe actress, and Ryan Gosling is a jazz pianist who really wants to bring the spirit of jazz back by opening up a jazz club. The two of them meet. It's a little, not exactly sparks flying at the beginning, kind of an awkward meet cute, if you will. But eventually, through the power of song and dance, discovered that they have they kind of like each other, and the relationship grows, and sort of similar in kind of a almost like a 500 Days of Summer kind of way. We sort of chart their relationship over the course of the next year, from the time that they meet to how their relationship and their careers eventually progress. They're aren't enough superlatives to talk about exactly what Chazelle has done with this film. The performances are magnificent. Emma Stone may very well be the front runner for Best Actress at this point.
That's great.
Well, Ryan Gosling, hopefully he's not the one that gets screwed out of a nomination, because I think between this and The Nice Guys, you just want to see Ryan Gosling in everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
And it's just, and like you said, people, when they hear the word musical, people tend to get a little standoffish sometimes. But this is not like a big, brash Broadway type musical. Not, where the songs tell the story and whatnot. This is more in the sense of the sort of your Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly type musicals. Lots of choreography, songs and dance, just really, really beautiful stuff. Throughout this movie, just funny and melancholy and bittersweet, really inspired casting choice towards the end of the film, too. I'll hope people pick up on that when they see it. But I think this is most definitely, of all the films I saw at Toronto this year, the one that is probably going to have the biggest presence at the Oscars this year.
Okay. I can't wait to see it. I just can't wait.
Oh, dude, you're gonna please.
And it, I know it opens December 16th, but yes. the Chicago Film Festival is screening it.
Opening night film at the Chicago Film Festival.
Right, it's the opening night film at the Chicago Film Festival. So if you can grab tickets for that,
do it now.
So that's La La Land, which I just, from the moment I saw the trailer, I was like, oh man.
Yeah, and what you hear in the trailer, what you see in the trailer is all, it's all there.
Yeah.
It's all on screen. It's beautifully choreographed. It's beautifully filmed. It's a cinematography. It just across the board nominations. Across the board.
Yeah. It's nice to see that Emma Stone is the front runner, for a Best Actress nomination, because she's just so great.
She is, and I have to go back and examine the rest of her work, but this is probably maybe a career best performance from her. It's the kind of like I said to our colleague Brian Tallarico after I saw the movie. I said, if Anne Hathaway can win for one number,
Her
name was Rob.
That's right.
Emma Stone probably has the lock.
If Anne Hathaway can win for crying while getting a haircut, then I think Emma Stone can do better. And I also want to say this. It's how there are certain on-screen, duos, couples,
mm-hmm.
that you wish were actually together in real life?
Yes.
These two right here, and I haven't even seen La La Land. I'm just basing it on Crazy Stupid Love.
Of course.
And not Gangster Squad.
Not Gangster Squad.
No, but like Crazy Stupid Love, every time I watch that movie, I'm like, man, they should date.
Yeah.
She should get rid of the British Spider-Man. And but he's married, he's got kids now, so that's and he's not married to a slouch either, who's also she's funny, and I let me tell you something. I always go back to how funny she is, Eva Mendez is in the other guys.
Pimps Don't Cry.
Yeah. So hilarious in that movie. God, I love her. So anyway, those are great people. La La Land. We're gonna break here on 720 WGN and then we come back with more. All right. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi, how you doing? All righty. Welcome back, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. And my dad will be calling in later on to tell a joke, and we will do a full recap of last night's Emmy Awards. But right now, we're getting another report, the final report. Eric is back from Toronto and the Toronto International Film Festival and giving us a report. All right, Eric, welcome back.
Yay.
Okay, man, where do you want to go next?
Since we had such a letdown on horror this week, I thought I'd give you a horror film that you can look forward to.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's a French horror film, French horror dark satire comedy kind of horror film called Raw.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't have a release date to my knowledge, but it does have a distributor in Focus World, so we will be seeing this at some point. And it's a story of a French girl who is a vegetarian who is accepted into veterinarian school. This is the first movie maybe I'm a little dense or something, but I didn't know veterinary school has, like, ritualistic hazing. Maybe it does in France. I don't know, but it seems like it's a weird college, a weird veterinary school where like all the rookies are hazed with and like carry like rituals, if you will.
Wow.
Be that as it may, so she's a vegetarian, and during one of the hazing rituals, she is basically forced through the initiation to eat some animal part, some sort of animal kidney, if you will. And all of a sudden, this vegetarian begins to have a craving for the meat product. Mm. And she will get it anywhere she possibly can find it. And this leads to several awkward moments, late night hunger cravings and things. Her older sister, is also a member of the veterinary school. This is basically like Goat. The movie Goat from Sundance with Nick Jonas.
Right.
That's opening next week here in Chicago.
Oh yeah,
too.
I knew it was opening soon. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically Goat, but with vegetarians who crave human flesh, if you will. that's really all I can say about this movie, and that's all I want to say about this movie because I want you to discover it for yourself.
Okay.
It's funny. It's bloody. It's weird. It has a fantastic ending. And I had an absolute blast watching this movie. So
right.
I want people to look out for a movie called Raw.
A French horror film called Raw. All right. I'm all about it. I'm looking at the poster art, and it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right. There you go. You got me on board for that one. Okay,
yeah.
Next.
A movie that's coming out in November that has been getting quite a bit of buzz, and it's a movie called Arrival.
Right.
This is a new film from Denis Villeneuve, who gave us The Prisoners and Sicario and Enemy with Jake Gyllenhaal. And this time he's turning his eye to science fiction. The movie stars Amy Adams as a language teacher at a college who becomes involved in the middle of this grand UFO invasion that has happened. A group of alien ships have appeared all over the world, as they tend to do in movies. And the government and everyone is trying to figure out exactly how to communicate with these things because they just seem to be hovering and floating and not really doing anything. Are they a threat? Are they friendly? What, how do we get in touch with these people, with these creatures or whatever they are? So they bring in Amy Adams and pair her up with Jeremy Renner, who plays a scientist, to figure out exactly how to communicate with these new visitors. And that's a great bulk of the movie is just them trying to figure out exactly how to, what do words and symbols and gestures mean. And it really is the kind of science fiction movie that people who love great science fiction movies really crave for, not the sort of the UFO invasion movie where everyone's just going to get blown up and, you're Roland Emmerich type movies.
Yeah.
But movies that this movie's been sort of compared to leading up to when I saw it, movies like not just Close Encounters, but also Contact and Interstellar. And when you put a movie on that sort of pedestal, you've immediately got my attention.
Yeah.
The problem for me is that I don't think Denis Villeneuve can stick a landing. And this is a problem that I've had with his movies all the way leading up to this movie, and even more so with this particular one. I know you're a big fan of Prisoners,
yeah.
And I think you really like Sicario too, right?
I like Sicario very much, but I really, really like Prisoners.
Yeah. I have kind of major problems. I've problems with the third act of Prisoners. I have some bigger problems with the second half of Sicario. This one, he gets up to a point where I was really digging this movie, really digging this, what was going on, just the idea that you don't see science fiction movies like this too often, really smart, kind of brainy science fiction movies that let you put together the pieces and let you be in sort of involved in the discovery of everything that's going on. And then he gets to a point I'm not going to spoil too much here, but he goes the full M. Night on us. In this movie, it's because two big things bother me in this movie. One is he comes around to sort of an M. Night like solution that wraps things up way too simply for a movie this seemingly so complex.
Yeah,
and he also brings us up to a point where not only have we been tricked with something throughout the movie, but Amy Adams' character makes a decision very late in this movie that I think is unforgivable.
Okay.
And again, I don't want to spoil what that is,
okay. But
when you come upon to what, you know, what she reveals, or more to the point, what she doesn't reveal to someone else in the film, I think is really kind of crappy.
Oh.
And it really kind of left a really sour taste on my mouth, even beyond the M. Night Shyamalan type stuff that he pulls in the third act of this movie. So I mean, as much as I want to recommend people see the first more than two-thirds of this movie, I think the last 20 minutes are a real failure.
Okay. All right. That's called Arrival. It opens November 11th. Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Forest Whitaker.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Well, we might as well look at Amy Adams, because she was in another movie that I did rather enjoy, and it's the new film from Tom Ford called Nocturnal Animals.
Yeah, Tom Ford, man, I don't know.
I'm not a fan of Single Man.
Yeah, neither am I.
Yeah.
He's from the world of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that movie felt like to me. It felt like it was made by a guy who doesn't make movies but makes fashion.
Yeah.
And I look at the trailer for this one, and although it's got a great cast and it looks really interesting, just like I'm hoping that the style is not as self-congratulatory as it was in Single Man.
Yeah, I think this is a movie that I'm a little more middle of the road on. And there are people that really don't like this movie, and then there are people that really like this movie. I'm a bit more in the 3-star region on
okay.
it.
Okay, all right.
I haven't seen the trailer, so I don't know exactly what they reveal in it.
Yeah.
But Amy Adams plays this art dealer who has she's married to Army married to Army Hammer, and she's sort of not in a good place professionally in her world. She's sort of putting out sort of garbage art trying to get people to buy it, and then she's presented with a manuscript from her ex-husband, who's played by Jake Gyllenhaal, that arrives, and it's a manuscript called Nocturnal Animals, and he's dedicated it to her. And she one night starts reading it, and the movie then puts us into the story of the novel, which has Jake Gyllenhaal in the role of the character in the book, and this sort of this nightmarish ordeal that he goes through within the context of his novel, that then leads him to the sort of justice-seeking mold, try to sort of be the tough guy in his own life that he was never able to fully accomplish in his marriage to Amy Adams. And in the story, he's helped along by Michael Shannon's character, who plays a law officer who's a little bit on the fringes.
Oh, really?
Kind of a junkyard dog, if you will, a little bit, and he sort of helps him seek justice for what happened to him. And so the movie sort of plays what is real, what is fiction, what really happened, what didn't happen, and really, is it metaphor or reality, all this kind of stuff. And it plays with some really interesting themes, and I think that, because you're sort of playing like story within a story within a story here. And some of the aspects of the story are far more interesting than other aspects of the story. So more so the actual manuscript that she's reading is the best stuff in the movie. And I think Jake Gyllenhaal is really good in the movie. And I think Michael Shannon probably is going to get an Oscar nomination for this.
Okay.
He's really that good in it. Certainly the best thing in it.
Okay.
I had some discussions with people about this movie there, and they have some different takes on it. I didn't quite entirely buy what they were selling, but I think it's an interesting film, and it's never a boring film. I really kind of like the ending of the movie, so it'll be curious to see what you think about it, because I think it's much better than A Single Man.
Okay.
I was far more interested in what was going on here than I was with, you know, whether or not Colin Firth was going to commit suicide or not in that movie. So
okay, and now this has got a release date, does it not? Yeah.
Yeah, this will be coming out. I think in December or maybe November.
December 9th.
December 9th.
Right. Okay, so it's in theaters December 9th. That's called Nocturnal Animals, one of two big movies for Amy Adams at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, okay. All right, Eric, hang on, okay?
Sure thing.
All right, Eric Childress is going to hang out with us one more for a little bit more here, and we get some more movie reviews wrapping up the Toronto Film Festival. And then we'll talk about last night's Emmys. Before we do any of that, we got a break here for weather and traffic. Welcome back, everybody. It's Monday morning. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. Hey, if you got any Emmy thoughts, comments about the show, about the winners, about the losers, about Jimmy Kimmel's performance, all that stuff, text them, call them. A little bit after the news, we're going to jump right into that, play some clips from last night's show, and talk about the winners and the losers and all that cool stuff. So that's for the Emmys. So it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, if you would like to jump in on that. Let's get back to Eric Childress, who is back from Toronto and giving us more reviews of the films he saw at the film festival. Okay, Eric, go ahead.
Okay, well, I want to butter you up with a really good one here before I break your heart a little bit.
All right.
So we'll tease that a bit. But I mentioned earlier that there was sort of one really big surprise that I don't think anyone really saw coming at this festival. And at Toronto in particular, I tend to fall in the line where I pick a lot of the really bad biopics that I end up picking.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, we get bad biopics every year, kind of generic ones. I saw two that were boxing movies, one called The Bleeder that I had mentioned, and another one called Bleed for This. So I got two boxing movies with Bleed in the title that weren't very good. But there's a film called Jackie that played at the festival, and it stars Natalie Portman as Jackie Onassis. Yes, and the movie takes place mostly within the days right after the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Okay.
The movie is framed with Jackie Onassis telling her story to a journalist played by Billy Crudup, and she, basically in sort of almost like a Liberty Valance kind of way, where she's pretty much controlling the interview, telling him stuff that she basically says will never make it into the interview and print at any point. She won't allow it. But she tells him things and tells her other things that are true, some other things that are just, you know, what she's feeling at the time. And this movie goes back and forth in time really kind of expertly throughout many passages around this period, where she's basically sort of controlling the story of exactly where she was in the moment of the assassination, to how she controlled tried to put together the funeral procession. And how people, the perception of who Jackie Onassis was. There's a lot of stuff in the movie that sort of recreates the tour of the White House video that she did back in 1961 in the early days of her and John taking over, redesigning the Lincoln bedroom, for example. And it's really, this movie kind of knocked me out and knocked a lot of people out, because here's another movie that in well under 2 hours, I think this movie's only like 100 minutes maybe, really covers an absolute extraordinary amount of ground, anchored by a performance by Natalie Portman that if she hadn't won for Black Swan already, I think she would be the front runner. It's one of the best performances of her career. The hair and makeup people alone do a fantastic job in recreating the look of Jackie Onassis. Mm-hmm. But between her and Natalie Portman, you feel like you're watching Onassis for the length of the film. It was directed by Pablo Larraín. Peter Sarsgaard plays Bobby Kennedy in the film. Who tends to not overdo the Bobby's accent.
Sure.
In the film, like sometimes he has it, sometimes he doesn't. It's the only part of the movie that I felt was a little bit distracting. But like I said, the manner in which the story is told, and the going back in time, and her talking to a priest, really beautifully played by John Hurt, in the film. This movie is it's emotional. It's just pure drama and suspenseful in the way that dramas can be without actually, you know, being Hitchcockian,
right?
In a way, it's just so it presents a side of this first lady that, you know, I didn't really know. That I didn't, you know, I mean, we've heard the stories, we've heard how strong she was and what an elegant lady she was, but this movie really presents a side of her that I hope everyone sees. And now that, I guess, Fox Searchlight picked it up pretty quickly, at the festival or in the days before the festival, I think that they're quickly moving away from the Birth of a Nation story.
I see.
And probably going to be concentrating, or they at least I recommend, they should be concentrating fully on putting everything into this movie, because okay. I think this, you know, I mean, the Iron Lady from a few years ago, which is absolutely awful.
Yeah.
This is the movie that, you know, anyone who said, oh, I like kind of like the Iron Lady, you should absolutely see this movie when it comes out in December, because it's really amazing.
Okay. Jackie with Natalie Portman as Jackie Kennedy, and it comes out December 9th. Okay, we got time for one more, Eric.
Okay. Well, I got to break your heart.
All right.
Nick, I'm sorry to do this, but the worst film that I saw at Toronto this year is Walter Hill's new film.
Oh, man.
Reassignment.
Oh, man. All right.
You know what this movie's about?
I think it's about like a sex change operation. And a killer.
Yeah. Michelle Rodriguez plays a hitman. It literally plays a hitman. And she runs afoul of her handlers, played by Anthony LaPaglia. Not exactly splurging for big name heavies there. Runs afoul of her. Someone offers him a better deal to deliver him rather than, you know, the jobs he has her has he has him assigned for. See, look, I'm doing this already. Because Michelle Rodriguez's him has killed the brother of Sigourney Weaver, who is a really terrible person, but she is a surgeon who does a lot of off-the-book surgery. And as punishment for killing her brother, she turns him into a woman. Turns Michelle Rodriguez from the bearded man into Michelle Rodriguez. Yeah, and there are so many things wrong with this movie, Nick, that, I mean, I suspect you will have the same reaction to this movie that you did when you saw De Palma's Passion.
Yeah, you know, having read a little bit about this, because I like to keep up with Walter Hill's career as it is, whatever's happening, and I actually was a fan of Bullet to the Head. I liked it, but, you know, this just, I mean, I don't understand.
I mean, people should put aside whatever controversy they want to drum up by thinking that there's somehow this movie is sort of offensive to the transgender community. Mm. Nothing could be further from the truth. It should be offensive to anyone who likes movies.
Yeah. Reassignment is the name of it, and it's directed, unfortunately, by Walter Hill. All right. All right, Eric, thanks. Eric Childress, back from Toronto, breaking my heart. We got a break here. The news is next on 720 WGN.